Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
Hey, what's going on, Dad? Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff coming up. Unfortunately, I was knocked out of my fantasy playoffs last week. I had to rely on Drew Brees, and of course, comes up with a second game in a row of no touchdown and three interceptions. So it was not a very fun Sunday for me, but we got a lot of playoff football to talk about. We got bowl season coming up, but you know, as we usually do, Bub, I thought we'd get to a little bit of news first, and I think the biggest headline of this week was the passing of Craig Sager. One of the most joyful sideline reporters I think the NBA has ever seen. The way he dressed, the way he interviewed coaches. Was diagnosed with leukemia a couple of years ago and had been in and out of, you know, treatments during those couple of years, and finally lost his battle earlier this week. So, Bob, I wanted to get your thoughts on Craig Sager's career. I know he's been around the block a time or two, and I know he's been a big part of the NBA. So I wanted to hear what you thought about his career.
I mean, he was great. And I mean, he was, he's always obviously known for his wild dress and, wasn't afraid to stick the microphone in anybody's face, and is really quite the character. And unfortunately, another sad passing from the family of ESPN. They've had quite a few lately, unfortunately. And he did a great job, and he was always fun to watch. And he didn't hold back any punches either.
Yeah, it was really cool. This past June, he actually got to do his first NBA Finals appearance, and he works for TNT, but ABC actually let him come on for the game, which is a big rival network. So that was very cool of them, for him to get that experience. Got to interview LeBron, and kind of, to me, watching the ESPYs this past year, kind of seemed like another story of a Jim Valvano, a guy who was beloved in what he did in his sport, and a guy who was obviously dealing with a lot in his life. I mean, he diagnosed with cancer is something that nobody really ever wants to hear, but another inspiration in the sports world, and he will not be forgotten.
He was so good, even Popovich let him interview him. So there you go.
Yeah, and he was actually from Batavia, Illinois, which is right around the corner from us.
Yeah,
went to Northwestern. So yeah, Craig Sager, a great guy for the game of basketball. He will definitely be missed. But Bob, next big headline of the week, Minnesota football. It looks like they're going to not play in the Holiday Bowl. Have you heard anything about that? And what are your thoughts about the situation?
Well, listen, once again, we've got an uprising from athletes that think they run the show. And I hope that Minnesota doesn't play in it. I hope they walk away from it, because you know what? These guys are getting a little bit too big for their britches, and there's 10 guys that got suspended under allegations, and unfortunately, that's the world we live in. You know all about it, and that's the school laid down the law, and whether you agree with it or not, that's it. And if you want to protest, then I hope they cancel the game, and I hope they kick those guys off the team too.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Bob. My problem with this is I don't know, all the details in the story. I don't think anybody does. I think that's why you've got such opposing sides here. But, from what I read, you know, it seems like an investigation was conducted. You know, nobody's really been charged and nothing's been brought against these guys. So I see the side of the Minnesota football players. I mean, if they, you know, think that, you know, their teammates, you know, there's no reason for them to be suspended. You know, I think this message might be a little more powerful than just the game of football. So I'm kind of torn on this issue, but
I'm not,
you know,
torn
it seems
at all.
To me.
I just want to say this. You know, Minnesota is giving up a ton of money not to do this. So obviously they have either more information they haven't released yet, but, you know, the people, schools, they just don't give up a few million dollars to not play in a bowl game. Okay.
Well, but they're not the ones giving it up. It's the players.
No, I understand that. But the players are giving it up because of the suspension of the other players. And, you know, listen, they don't want to play in a ball game. God bless them. Let them stay home and not play. You know, there has to be a set of rules, and you have to obey the rules. They are the university is the boss, right or wrong. And even, you know, I hate the NCAA. Okay, the way they run things. But until the rules and the laws are changed, I can do nothing about it but complain. But certainly, if I'm playing in a ball game, I'm not giving up because I had some teammates that, even if they didn't do anything, are under some sort of investigation. And furthermore, typically, you know, and I know that when there is smoke, there's usually a little fire behind there.
Well, I mean, that's usually the case, but I completely disagree. I mean, I think, you know, this issue of, you know, 60 or 70 guys coming behind these 10 players who are being suspended. I think it's a movement that, you know, right or wrong, I appreciate these players taking a stand. I mean, if they think, you know, their teammates are being wronged in such a fashion that, you know, playing this game would kind of, you know, I don't want to say disrespect, but, you know, if they think it's wrong and they think there's something they can do about it, I don't disagree with what they're doing. I know it seems kind of foolish that they would choose all not to play in a game, but, you know, if they think they're being so unjustly scrutinized by their own university that they think this is a necessary action to take, you know, I'm all for it. I mean, obviously, you know, the school has good reason to do what they're doing, but I think the players on the other side also have good reason to do what they're doing. And at the end of the day, you know, they're the product that gets put on the field, so they actually have, you know, the last say in what gets done. But you know what, I think the players obviously, I think, have a good point here, or they wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
You know, and again, I would disagree with that. I think the players are trying to muscle them, and we'll see how it all plays out. But at the end of the day, they're going to miss the chance in a lifetime to play in a bowl game, and they're trying to make a stand, and my opinion is they're trying to muscle the university here, and I applaud the university for standing pat. I mean, you know, again, I'm typically will side with management first because, again, it's their product and they're giving up the money. So if they're willing to give up the money, there has to be something there to it. And that's really what I see it. I mean, again, you can look either side, but there's a right time and a right place and a right venue to do all these things. And I think the players are making a mistake. But, hey, they're the players. And that's the nice thing about being an American, man. You can do it. You can take that shot if you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I guess we'll have to rarely agree to disagree and move on. A little more news, NFL refs, Mike Pereira, you know, this is a guy who was the head of, you know, NFL officiating, is a guy who's constantly on TV when they go to calls, they go to the booth, they ask him his opinion, and he came out with a book this past week and, you know, basically made a claim that, you know, referees are regularly receiving assistance and advice from replay officials on their wireless headsets, communicating during the game, which is actually against the rules of the NFL, Bub. You know, I don't know what Mike Pereira is trying to do here. I see his point. You know, something is against the rule that the refs are doing. You know, I would see why he might want to bring it to light, you know, being the former head of officiating.
Hold that thought. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. This is, of course, you know, I have an opinion on that as well. But this is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba, and we're going to step out here for a break, and we're going to come back. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every weekend, as well as the Bubba Show during the week. The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba will be right back after the break.
You don't get my soul, do you?
Technically, no, but
I'm smarter than the
devil. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. And Xander, you're talking about Pereira, and you're talking like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he came out and basically said, you know, the officials on the field are getting help from the replay booth during the game, which is, like, technically against the rules. But my thought is that, I mean, everybody just wants to get the calls right. So I know it is against the rules, and I guess I can't really see why. You know, I think the whole point of the game of having the referees is to make sure the game goes in an orderly fashion and that all calls that are close, you know, the correct call is made. So I guess I get Mike Pereira's point about following the rules, but I don't know. I don't really see his point too well. But, I mean, I guess I want to hear your thoughts, and I'm very interested.
His point is he wants to sell books. That's his point. That's his whole point. He's got no other point. He's an asshole. There's no reason to do that other than you want to sell books. And because he's no longer an official. So he's throwing the rest of the officials under the bus because he wants to sell a few books. And you know what? That's pretty low class, and he deserves to get canned from where he is, but they'll love it because he'll create the controversy, which will create the audience. And that's all he's trying to do. I mean, we know there's things that can be done anytime, and it's amazingly how sometimes there's always a critical play made at a critical time, and sometimes that same play doesn't get called. I don't like it. You know, those certain things should be kept to themselves. In my opinion, and I don't like it whatsoever, but of course the guy is trying to sell some extra books, and I'm sure he'll sell and make an extra 10 grand because he just threw all of his guys under the bus.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of hard for the NFL to come out here and say anything about it because, you know, if it's true and, it, you know, what the refs are doing are against the rules, and it kind of makes them look bad as well. But I agree with you. I mean, Mike Pereira, this is pretty low of him. I don't really see the point besides to make money, which is, you know, God bless him. I mean, that's what he wants to do. You know, there's a great saying, if you listen to a guy in the radio, people like him. You know, for every one person that likes him and listens to him, there's two people that don't like him and listen to him just so they can, you know, be in their car and go against everything that he says. So I think this is definitely, you know, I got to give him credit. This is a great way to create controversy within the NFL, and he'll, you know, no doubt make a couple extra bucks, but you know, I think it's pretty classless. It makes everybody look bad, and there's really no way, you know, for the NFL to look good in this situation now, because if they come out and say, you know, we're trying to get the calls right, yes, they're getting some extra help. At the same time, it's against the rules. So what are we saying about rules if we can't even follow the ones that we set for ourselves? So, yeah, this is just, you know, Mike Pereira. If the NFL got rid of him, if all the networks did, I wouldn't even bat an eye.
He'd be, come on, man. That's what he'd be.
But Bub, Leonard Fournette, more. I got a lot of news today, a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, Leonard Fournette came out and said he's not going to play in the Citrus Bowl. His ankle, he says, is about 85% to 90%. And I think this is a big piece of news, Bub, because Leonard Fournette, I mean, say what you want about the guy. He is, I think, you know, when he was on the field, one of the greatest college running backs of all time. And we've seen it throughout his entire career. He kind of reminds me of Adrian Peterson, the way he was able to, you know, not only run over people but kind of run around them. And I think this has got to be disappointing for a lot of his teammates. You know, some of these guys, you know, at bowl games, not everybody makes it to the NFL. That's obvious. You know, no matter what kind of program it is, even in Alabama, not every guy on those teams makes it to the NFL. So I mean, this is the kind of game. This could be the last game some of these kids ever play. And the fact that, you know, probably the best player on their team isn't going to be a part of it can be a little damaging. But you know what? I'm on Leonard Fournette's side here. You know, he's got a lot bigger picture in life than this one bowl game in particular. He's not 100% healthy. Has dealt with a lot of injuries this year to that ankle. And, you know, previously he's dealt with some injuries as well. So, I mean, this guy is a clear-cut first-round pick at the running back position and has the talent, I think, to be a very good running back in the NFL. And I think he's making a decision, you know, more for the bigger picture here and not just, you know, one day at a time. So, you know what, I don't like the way it sounds, but I can't fault the guy for making a decision that's, you know, could affect the rest of his life, you know, had he happened to have, you know, gotten hurt severely in this game.
Well, you know what, I don't have a problem with him not playing, but the problem I have is they're playing for the national championship. You get better at your ass, you'd be playing. So that's the only issue I have. But, you know, certainly this is this individual making a decision, and he does have bigger fish to fry. And certainly, again, it's a topic today. It's about the money. And, you know, certainly I don't have a problem with him not playing if he chooses not to. But I can tell you, I would bet any amount of money that if it was the national championship they'd be playing for, he'd be in there. So, but you know, I have no problem with him not playing if he doesn't want to play.
Yeah, you know, that is a really interesting point. You know, it depends. You know, the game, if they're in the college football playoff, I could not. I agree with you. I couldn't see him not playing. But you know what? I guess you kind of got to take everything with a grain of salt and measure out each situation to how you know it'll be valued the rest of your life. And I see Leonard Fournette's point of view here. Like I said, it makes me kind of sour, but I can't fault the guy. Bub, one more piece of news. Aroldis Chapman, you know, he won the World Series with the Cubs. Now he's back in the pinstripes where a lot of people thought he would end up. Came out during an interview and said he disagreed with the way he was used in the World Series. Did you hear anything about that?
I did. And listen, I disagreed the minute they did it. So, you know, I'm not surprised. I thought Madden puked during the whole series. He almost lost that series himself, and I thought he misused him myself. I was a big believer that he misused him. I mean, to use him in a game when you're up 7 runs in the ninth inning was a mistake. So I'm in agreement with Aroldis Chapman here.
Yeah, you know, I am too. I mean, I think the biggest point he was making was game six. You know, they had the 5-run lead and they had him in there, which was fine. I mean, it's the World Series. You can't lose games. But to have him out there in the ninth up 7 was very, very questionable, especially when you had to figure that they were going to go to him the next night. I mean, this guy throwing 45 pitches is definitely not ideal when he's probably your best reliever. But for me, it was kind of just like, you know what? Maybe they did misuse you, but, you know, who gives a crap? I mean, you won the World Series in the biggest sporting drought in, you know, professional sports history with, you know, a team that, you know, the lovable losers. I mean, it might have been the biggest sporting victory in a series ever in the history of sports. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, maybe you are right, but, you know, what the hell is the point of coming out and saying it? It really doesn't matter at this point. And you know, no matter, you know, I don't really care that he said it either. I mean, either way, it doesn't matter. Cubs got what they wanted. You know, they won the World Series. And, you know, Aroldis Chapman moves on and signs a monster deal with the Yankees. So, you know, nobody's really affected here. I just thought it was a funny thing for him to come out and say, you know, and he didn't really even need to.
No, right, of course. I mean, you know, guys open their mouth for no reason. It's kind of stupid. And, you know, you won. You didn't pitch very good. We didn't win because of you. I mean, I will say that. We didn't win because of Aroldis Chapman. But anyways, are you going to bring up our good friend from the ex-coach of the Rams that we've been calling for 2 years here?
Well, just as the man ties, you know, being the all-time most losing coach, you know, in the NFL, you know, he gets fired. And this was kind of funny after he just signed that extension, you know, a week before. But, you know, like we said, we've been calling for this move for a long time. Jeff Fisher and the Rams never really fit together. I mean, after the first couple years in that program, on that team, I don't want to call it a college program, but I mean, it never really fit. The Rams were just so subpar the past 4 years. When I thought they had a chance, you know, after making that deal in the RG3 draft, when they got those 6 picks, you know, 6 players back who ended up starting, I mean, to where they are now, I thought it was a necessary move. I thought it should have been done way before this. I mean, even going back to the beginning of the year with the starting Case Keenum, a guy who, you know, clearly isn't up to the caliber of an NFL starting quarterback, but Rams might have bigger problems on their hands. I mean, I've watched Jared Goff play a couple games, and he definitely, you know, he's done some good things, but, you know, does not look like a number one overall pick. But I won't judge him yet. But I mean, Jeff Fisher, I thought this was a must do for the Rams, and they waited a little longer than a lot of people thought they would, but it finally happened, and I can't say I'm surprised at all.
Well, I mean, you know, St. Louis and now Los Angeles, that's where good offensive players went to die, because he could not make them use. So I don't know anything about Goff yet, but I can't take anything away from him yet, because I'm sure he didn't have the proper preparation. I'm sure the owners forced Fisher to throw him in there. And his whole scheme is so bad that we'll get a better view of Goff, you know, next year, next couple of weeks. But, you know, we'll see what goes on. But this is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bub. We're going to step out here for a break. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every weekend, as well as the Bubba Show every day. We're going to step out here. We'll be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Zanz and Bubba. And Xander, we've got some interesting games this week. And, of course, on Thursday night, the Jeff Fisherless team got throttled by Seattle. But you know what? I don't think Seattle looks so good. And certainly, you know, in every game, there's always a couple of key plays. And early in that game, I was flying back on a plane, and I saw that it was 4th-and-1, and St. Louis was going for a touchdown, and they got stopped. And then, of course, the game turned out to be a rout. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, this game, I don't want to say it wasn't a meaningless game for the Seahawks. They did clinch the division, but it's really hard to get a gauge of a team when you're playing the Rams. I think, you know, the Rams have obviously, I mean, they're not the Browns. They've won some games this year, but they're not a very good football team. So didn't really, you know, change my opinion at all of Seattle. I mean, I thought they were going to beat the Rams pretty handedly. I didn't bet on it, so I can't say that I was that confident. But I think the Seahawks, you know, I don't think they're as good of a team as they have been the past few years. And we look at that Super Bowl win when they just dismantled Peyton Manning and the Broncos. And then the next year when, you know, they were one Marshawn Lynch handoff away from winning again until Russell Wilson threw that interception. But this team is a dangerous team. Obviously, the defense isn't as stacked as it used to be. I mean, Earl Thomas, you know, breaking his leg, being out for the year, that definitely hurts. But, I mean, this team is dangerous, and I would not want to play them. But they did lock up the division, so we will see them in the playoffs. And this is a team I don't think will win the Super Bowl, but, you know, they're I would call them a dark horse. I think, you know, a Pete Carroll-led team, I mean, this team has been dangerous. They have had playoff success, and then they do have a quarterback who has won a Super Bowl, so he knows what it takes. I think not having Marshawn Lynch, obviously we've seen this season, it's been kind of a big loss. You know, they've been dealing with some injuries in the backfield. Thomas Rawls had a breakout campaign last year, but, you know, he ended up coming back a couple weeks ago off that broken ankle. So we'll see how that goes during the playoffs. Russell Wilson, I don't think, is completely healthy either, but, I mean, this team is dangerous.
I think they're okay. I'm not a huge fan. I don't think they have what it can do to get it done, and I don't think their offense is anywhere near as good in the past. So we'll see. You know, listen, I don't have anything against them. You know, they're certainly, hell, I bet them in both Super Bowls. So I have no problem with them. But, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting. But a lot of things going on, you know, around the NFL, and a couple of big games this week. And anything catch your eye?
Well, you know, Bob, I wanted to go over last week before we get to this week. I think that, you know, the biggest storyline last week, the Dolphins, hold on, win by a field goal, but they do lose Ryan Tannehill for the rest of the year. I think this is a big blow. I mean, this team was a team I have not given a lot of credit to all year, but, I mean, we talked about them a little last week saying they are in the playoff picture. Now they have to turn to Matt Moore, a man, you know, who has not started a game since 2011. So, I mean, this is a big blow to the Dolphins, but they do get the Jets this week. I mean, you know, what a blessing in disguise that they get to face this 4-9 Jets team with Bryce Petty starting at quarterback. I think they have a legitimate shot to win. I know they're a 2.5-point favorite, but you never know how a guy like Matt Moore is going to respond to the situation. But, you know, they did grind out the win. But, I mean, losing Ryan Tannehill is very big for this Dolphins football team.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. And Matt Moore, listen, Matt Moore was once signed by the Packers. I thought he was so good. And, you know, he's a journeyman backup. And, you know, listen, he'll probably be okay. And they are playing a team that has basically quit. Of course, they did make a nice comeback, even it was against a dog team last week against San Francisco. So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out.
Right. And another big game, Matt Stafford, the guy does it again. I know they're playing the Bears, who stink, but I mean, I can't help but give this guy a lot of credit again. I mean, this Lions football team is 9-4. They're playing, I think, the best football I have ever seen them play, besides maybe when they made that playoff appearance. I think it was about 5 years ago now. It's been a long time since, you know, the Lions have been a consistently good football team. But I give Matthew Stafford a lot of credit. He's had a great year. And I think definitely the guy has to be a part of the MVP talks. I mean, we talk about most valuable player. This guy has been there through the thick and thin of this Lions season, and they're definitely going to make the playoffs. I think they're gonna win the NFC North. I know Green Bay had an enormous win against Seattle last week, and they looked awfully good. But this Lions team is headed to the playoffs, and you know, I'm excited to see Matthew Stafford get back in it again. I mean, I remember, you know, way back when they made it. You know, they had a great game with the Saints that they ended up losing to Drew Brees, but you know, this is a new year and a new team, but I have to pat myself on the back. The Giants pulled out a very defensive-minded win against the Cowboys. You know, the Cowboys scored early in the first quarter to go up 7-0, took 10 third-quarter points, and that was it. 10-7, Giants win. My team finally bailed me out. They not only covered, but they won straight up. Eli Manning was kind of average, but you know, this team found a way to get it done. Odell Beckham had an enormous touchdown. But, Bubba, I think one of the bigger storylines for this game is Dak Prescott underwhelms again. 165 yards, one touchdown, two picks. And, you know, that was a third game in a row he threw for under 200 yards. So do the Tony Romo calls start getting a little louder now, or do we kind of brushing them back still?
They might get a little bit louder. You know, who knows? You know what? The Giants, they got two losses, are both to the Giants. But I have to ask you something about Detroit first. Are you worried about Matthew Stafford's thumb?
I am a little bit worried. You know, they've kind of said it isn't a cause for concern, but I think whenever you're dealing with a quarterback and an injury to any part of that throwing hand, I think it's definitely concerning. Matt Stafford is a really tough guy. I mean, if you've seen him play at all throughout his entire career, he's not afraid to stick his nose in there, but I think this is a little bit different. The fingers and the hand, I mean, they're a little more delicate than the body, but I mean, you've seen this guy throw his body around, you know, basically without any regard during his entire career. So I know he's going to gut it out. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but I know we're going to get, you know, 100% of Matt Stafford, no matter how he's feeling, because, I mean, he is the leader of this team, and they're not going to go down without him.
Yeah, and, you know, we got one pretty big game this week. What do you think about the Titans and the Chiefs?
Man, I mean, it's hard not to like the Titans right now. I mean, they come out, throw for 88 yards against the Denver Broncos and come away with a 13-10 win. I mean, the Titans are the kind of team that I really love watching in the NFL. I mean, they don't really light it up in the passing game when they're playing against good teams. I mean, I know Marcus Mariota has had a few games this year that kind of make you just go, wow, this guy's really chucking the ball around. But against a pretty good Denver Broncos team, I don't want to call them great. I mean, you know, Trevor Siemian at quarterback, and Paxton Lynch filling in for him when he's injured. I mean, this team isn't great, but they're still a very good football team. And the way they were able to hold them to 10 points, they were able to run the football. I mean, DeMarco Murray put on a pretty good show, you know, 90 yards and a touchdown. Very solid game. This Titans team's playing really well on defense. And I have to say, I do like them plus the 5 points at Kansas City this week. I mean, I think it's going to be close because the Titans can run the ball, and the Chiefs have issues stopping the run. So I think this is a game that could come down to a last-second field goal, in which case I'd love to have the Titans.
I'm on the other side of that game as a rule, so we'll leave that one off the board. But, you know, as we said last week, that Denver-Titan game was a pretty – it looked like a fishy line, and of course it was. And I think another interesting line game this week is actually Denver again against New England. New England being, I think, 1-point favorite at Denver. What do you think?
Oh, man, this is tough. You know, Denver is one of those teams that I think Tom Brady really hasn't figured out the past couple years. I mean, you look at the playoffs last year, that AFC Championship game was just an annihilation of the Patriots' offensive line and Tom Brady. I mean, they really got destroyed, and you rarely see that. I mean, no matter who is on the Patriots, you rarely see that. You know what? I think I like the Broncos as a home underdog here. I mean, it's tough for me to go with them with Trevor Siemian at the helm, but, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots, like we've said, I mean, every team is due for a clunker, and I don't necessarily think they're going to come out and play bad, but I think the Broncos are going to step up in this game. I mean, they're a team that is on the fringe of the playoffs. I mean, you look at the teams in their division, they've kind of more or less gotten screwed so far with the Chiefs and the Raiders being so good, but they're definitely a team that's still in playoff contention, and I have a feeling that, you know, Von Miller is going to light it up this week and find a way to make this Patriots offensive line shake. But, you know, the Patriots did pick up Michael Floyd, you know, the day after he got a DUI and got cut from the Cardinals. So, I mean, Bill Belichick up to his old ways, but that made a lot of sense to me. When you look at the Patriots, Danny Amendola is out until the playoffs, and Rob Gronkowski is out for the entire season. They really don't have many threats, but, you know, each week Chris Hogan, Julian Edelman, Martellus Bennett find a way to be at the top of the stats boards. You know, looking at daily fantasy. So I thought this made a lot of sense for the Pats, but I do think the Broncos are going to win this game.
If they don't win it, they don't have to worry about the playoffs anymore. That'd be for sure, because they'll be out. They'll be out on the outside looking in, and we have one more big game we have to look at when we come back from the break, because, of course, it involves Dak Prescott, because we don't have to worry about the Arizona Cardinals anymore. This is the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and check out and get the download of the show every single weekend, as well as the Bubba Show every day. The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. We will be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge. I've had my show. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. And so, Xander, we've got the Sunday night, another prime timer for Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Jameis Winston and crew, and Dallas against Tampa Bay. And all of a sudden, Tampa Bay has come out of nowhere, and they're playing pretty awesome football here. What do you think of the game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Tampa Bay defense, they're giving up. They're putting up some Alabama-type statistics. You know, when you look at points per game, they're giving up, you know, a little under 13 points in the past five games, and that's just unbelievable. I mean, this Bucs defense has really come alive the second half of this season, and I would absolutely take the Bucs plus 6.5 against the Cowboys. I almost think, you know, if this line was at 3, I would still be inclined to take the Bucs. You know, like I said before, Dak Prescott has not looked very sharp, you know, these past few weeks, and Ezekiel Elliott is a great back, and this Dallas offensive line is great, but I think Tampa Bay matches up really well with them, and Jameis Winston has been playing well this season. I think Doug Martin, you know, is finally coming back to form. You know, hasn't put up the biggest games, but, you know, you look at guys on the outside, Mike Evans is a top, you know, 5 receiver in the NFL, so I think this is definitely going to be a battle. And I think the Bucs, you know, they've kind of put everything aside after that first half, and they've been playing some wonderful football. So I would love to take them plus the points. I know they're on the road, but, I mean, prime time game. I don't think this is a spot where Jameis Winston folds. I think he plays well, and I think, you know, this might come down to the wire, but when we're looking against the spread, I think the Bucs are a great play here.
Well, I think they win the game straight up, so I'm right there with you. And, of course, we've got the start of bowl season today. A lot of games, they start coming. They start coming almost every day, fast and furious. And, of course, obviously early in it, there's, you know, not a lot of, you know, I mean, it depends. If you're a gambler, they're all exciting. But, you know, not a lot of big names. But, I mean, you know, one of the big names, which is today, Houston. Houston playing San Diego State. Seems like a pretty small line for a team that was a top five team at one time this year, 4 points over San Diego State. You got any thought in that game?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to call it a trap line, but I mean, there's a reason this team was in the top five and then they weren't. You know, they had a couple of clunkers, as I like to call it. And the San Diego State team is a very good football team. I mean, you know, record wise, you know, they're both pretty similar. San Diego State's 10-3. Houston is 9-3. You know what? I'm inclined to take Houston in this game, but you know, I would not be surprised at all if San Diego State were able to win. Not only cover, but win straight up. You know, Houston, they played some great games this year, and they've also had a few games that kind of make you scratch your head. They ended up having a pretty decent season, but I would take them. But, you know, it's not one of my premier picks. I didn't find my way into a bowl pool this year, so I didn't even get to make an official selection. But on the radio, I'll go with Houston.
Yeah, no, I think Houston's going to win the game myself. I think that they'll, you know, they'll – the last time, you know, and their coach is gone. So I think they muscled up here and get it done. And then, of course, there's some obviously a lot of lower games here. But, you know, big game, you know, next Friday, you know, the Naval Academy, which is one of my favorites, of course, their quarterback, got wrenched, and of course they have a new young quarterback who they had actually take out of the stands one game, and you know, he actually brought him back against Army, and they couldn't hold on to that game. But they're, you know, they're it's a small price. I don't know. I think that they can outrun Louisiana Tech here. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, first, that Army-Navy game was awfully exciting. I mean, Army winning for the first time in 14 years, but it was a sight to see. I mean, that's always one of my favorite games to watch. And people have told me that have gone to the game, it's probably one of the best sporting events that you could ever go to. But, yeah, I mean Navy, I got to think that, you know, the quarterback was definitely a little bit of an issue in the Army game, but I think with, you know, a lot more time to prepare here, you know, you get about 2 weeks – for a guy who didn't get many reps, I think this Navy team, when they're on their game, is very hard to beat. And we saw that a few weeks ago when they had that huge upset. But yeah, I like Navy plus the points here. I mean, they're a team that, you know, if they get up on you and they control the clock, very hard to take down. I mean, you need a pretty good defense to hang with this team. I mean, they still are a top 25 team. And Louisiana Tech, I mean, is a good football team. But I like Navy in this game plus the five.
I like them as well. And you know, what's really funny is the armed forces, you know, they're all three in bowl games this year, and they're two of them are double digit favorites. So it's interesting this year at the you know, it's obviously very hard for them to compete year in and year out, because, you know, obviously you've got to serve a term in the military if you go play for them. So it's really interesting. So, you know, as you look down the schedule, you have any thoughts of any of the big games? Have you looked over anything? Anything that stands out in your mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, this is a huge game. Ohio State, Clemson, Bub. I like Ohio State in this game. I think they are a better football team, and they've been playing more consistent this year than Clemson has. I mean, you know what? I don't feel comfortable betting against Clemson, because I saw Deshaun Watson, what he did last year in the college football playoff, and I mean, they were one, you know, one game-changing play from beating Alabama. I know Alabama ended up winning by two scores, but, I mean, that was a game, I think, that Clemson, looking back, you know, they made a couple of key mistakes that Alabama capitalized on, but they were, you know, they were one play, I think, from being the national champions. But this year, I think, it's been a little bit of a different story. They're still a very high-caliber team, but I think this Ohio State team, I think preparation always favors a guy like Urban Meyer. I mean, we saw what he did a couple of years ago when, you know, he took a third-string quarterback who hadn't played all year and beat the crap out of Alabama. I mean, that was a close game until Ezekiel Elliott had that 80-yard touchdown run. But, I mean, you look at a guy who had really never played before at Ohio State, and he was able to take down Alabama. I give a lot of credit to Urban Meyer. I mean, he is – I think you have to put him – I mean, I can't say he's better than Nick Saban, but he's definitely a top three college football coach. I'd also throw Harbaugh in there. But I do like Ohio State in this game. I think they're going to grind – I think they're going to grind it out and win by, I'd say, something like 10 points. I think this will be a pretty good game, but one that Ohio State will move on pretty handedly.
Urban Meyer's got Nick Saban's number, but let me ask you a question. So you talked about Deshaun Watson. What do you think of the Heisman? And – you know, and what did you think about some of the guys voting before the season was over?
Well, first of all, I think that's a bunch of crap. You know, the Heisman is supposed to be based on a whole body of work, and the fact that people would vote before it was over, I mean, it's kind of against the spirit of the award. But if they voted for Lamar Jackson, it doesn't, you know, piss me off as much, because if they were saying that no matter how good of a game Deshaun Watson or any of these guys have, you know, if they put up 10 touchdowns, Lamar Jackson to me is still the best player in college football. I don't have as much of a problem with it, but I still do have a little bit of a problem with it. But, you know, we're talking about the Heisman. I think the right guy won. This race earlier in the year was a much bigger landslide than it ended up being when the award was given out. But, I mean, the fact that Louisville dropped some key games that they really shouldn't have, that kind of made, you know, took down Lamar Jackson's stock a little bit. But I agree with the winner. I thought he was the best player in college football, and put up some crazy statistics. But, I mean, he was the most fun. I think, you know, you could say he was the most valuable. And I think Deshaun Watson, though, made a big push down the stretch. I mean, I thought there was a minor chance that if he could have walked away with that award, and I wouldn't have been super surprised, but I think the right guy took home the hardware.
I got to go in either way. I just didn't like that guy stepped up and voted ahead of time, and
you know, to me, that's, you know, kind of silly. You know, you have a vote, and, you know, it's not like everybody's got a vote. So, you know, it's a privilege to have a vote for that. And, you know, I think it's kind of a mistake, you know, that just to me. But, you know, as we get ready here, we've got, you know, kickoff today. And anything we missed in the NFL, anything we missed that you need? We got about 30 seconds left.
Nope. I think my one last point I wanted to make was Charlie Strong, you know, officially hired at the University of South Florida. I think this is a great fit for him. I think he takes this program leaps and bounds ahead of where they are now. And Lane Kiffin is also back in the head coaching circle, so we'll see where he goes from here.
And this is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. And, of course, we'll see you back here next week on Christmas Eve. Enjoy the Bulls. Enjoy the NFL. Enjoy it all, because right now is about the hottest time in sports going. And this we'll see you next week. And have a great weekend, everybody. The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. LibertyTalk.fm gets you the download of the podcast every week, as well as the Bubba Show every day. Have a great weekend, everybody. The Sporting Edge. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.